Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, we are back. It's Thursday night, and tonight's program we have back with us Dr. David Gwalalu. He is I've been anxious to get him back on the program. We, you know, his expertise in homeland security, intelligence, the Middle East, Islam, all of that right now is a hot topic, and we're real fortunate to have him on with us tonight. And he's going to share his insight. We're going to talk about Donald Trump. We're going to talk about refugees. It's getting crazy. I can tell you, my lifetime, I don't remember the United States being under the gun like we are right now. I know that it must have happened in different times. So, you know, at one point, heck, we were invaded, not quite invaded, but we were bombed, Pearl Harbor. That was just here recently. Reminder that we're not exempt from attacks, so that's for sure. Dr. Gwalalu, welcome to the program. How are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you, Doc? Good to be here.
Yes, yes. I'm good. You know me. We have discussions about these things off the air, and I'm curious to get your take on things. Right now, Donald Trump is in the news. He's made the statement about keeping all Muslim people out, all people from any Muslim country, no Muslims into this country until, he says, we figure things out. A couple things. Number one, is there any way to truly vet these people that are coming in, the refugees? Is there a way to really know who they are, what they believe in, whether they've got good or bad intentions?
Well, that's a good question, and the answer is no. It's not. There is no an easy process for that, and you can relate that basically to the intelligence matters. And here is a problem of what we have currently: our intelligence community. It's missing on a lot. The reason I'm saying this when I say it's missing on a lot is we don't have enough boots on the ground, not as a military per se, but as intelligence officers. You get intelligence officers deployed overseas that they don't speak the language, they don't understand the culture, they have a blonde hair and blue eyes, and they can mingle out with the population, they can mix in, they can blend in, they can... So it would be very hard to understand what's up in the country. Take, for example, what took place in Cairo during the Tahrir Square demonstrations. We didn't know about it till after the fact. Why? Because we didn't have intelligence officers on the ground. We were like shocked, surprised, with all the technology we have, with all the resources we have, and we couldn't even detect something like that. The same concepts could be applied to these refugee issues. This is not an easy task to do, and it can be resolved within a month or two or three or six or a year because, as you suggested, you don't know who is who. And we do have the right to consider, okay, who's coming to our country? I'll be the first one to say that. But you take that within the context of what Mr. Trump is saying, it's completely out of context. And that's where the problem is. As I... I recall I wrote an article, 2 weeks ago or so, about what Mr. Trump is saying, this empty rhetoric, basically, and falsehood. And it's only going to get him so far. Yes, I understand that the political game. I understand how politicians have to say whatever, the hypes to get the vote. But supporters in this case, which I'm referring to supporters of Mr. Trump, they really don't care about the facts, let alone the ideals. So when you have a candidate that's basing the entire campaign on lies, then you got an issue with that. And let's hypothetically say, as I suggested on the article, that this strategy might even get him through Iowa in the winter. Okay? Maybe even to the nomination of the Republican Party, which will be a disaster for the party to begin with. And here is why. It's because the way Mr. Trump is conducting himself, politically speaking, as a presidential candidate, it reflects on the chaos that's going into the political, into the Republican Party. And this is the time when you start to think about the leadership of the Republican Party. It is not enough to just say, oh, Mr. Trump is way out of line. And that's taking that into the context, you put that all this within what America stands for. Now, you are identifying a particular ethnic group. Okay, let's put the facts where they belong. There's your listeners might be interested in an article just came up, actually, what was it, yesterday or 2 days ago, at the Daily Beast. Okay? And the title is, it says, Trump only loves rich Muslims who give him money. So you can't just see the double standard there. Oh, I'm going to say to the country that, oh, no more Muslims coming over to the country, which, by the way, challenged the Constitution and the ideals on which our country was founded to begin with. On the other hand, no, I'm only going to be dealing with the rich Muslims, especially in the Middle East, in the Gulf states, that they can sort of generate funds and money for me. But this issue of the lies that Mr. Trump it seems to build his campaign on brings also some bad memories in our history. Do you recall what happened with Joe McCarthy's lies about the government taking the communists? Okay, do you recall what happened with the lies told to Congress to hide the Iran-Contra affairs? Do you remember what happened with the pretext of the bio and chemical weapons prior to the invasion of Iraq? So it's almost like it appears to be a pattern going on from time to time with our political system and how we conduct the political process here. Well, but on the other hand, go ahead, Dick.
Well, I was just going to say his supporters come out and say, well, he's actually, if he were president, has the right, and they're now reflecting back to U.S. Code 1182, inadmissible aliens is what the section's called. But basically, you know, they're saying that the president has the ability to deny entry of any class of aliens into the United States who might be detrimental to the interests of the United States. So
they're saying
that he is not violating the Constitution. This is what people don't like. What it's so hard to find truth and so hard to find something that's valid. Is it unconstitutional or is it not? I don't know. This is what I think. I know Senator Ted Cruz prides himself on being a constitutionalist. If he felt that Donald Trump was in clear adherence to the Constitution, then he would support whatever Trump was saying.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I see it. But he's not trying to attach himself to Trump on that issue.
Well, because it defies the Constitution, first of all, in a certain aspect of it. Now, let me be clear here. Constitutionally speaking, if the country is in danger, the president has to take whatever measures to secure the country. There is no ifs or buts. That's clear in the Constitution. However, the way you go about it just by singling a specific ethnic groups or banning an entire group of people from coming to the U.S. legally with all the documents and so forth, which is constitutionally bound by what we have in our Constitution to allow individuals to visit, that becomes a different matter altogether. But before I move on here, I need to remember to clarify one thing here. Whatever's going on with the Trump phenomenon here, the craziness, the whatever you want to call it, there is another side to that argument. And that argument is maybe Donald Trump is capturing the discontent of some Americans who are sick of Washington, D.C., who are sick of the political process that we have, who are sick of how how Congress is dysfunctional. Maybe he's stealing the hatred and lies that lies beneath the surface of so many communities here in our country. The kind of hatred that will make people to sort of pretend that doesn't exist, okay? And this kind of hatred that that I'm talking about has manifested itself in certain ways, like what happened in South Carolina with Dylann Roof in Charleston, what happened with Chris Harper Mercer in Roseburg, Oregon, what happened with Robert Deere in Colorado Springs. Could this be the phenomenon that the other side of the argument? We just have to look at it both ways. I'm not suggesting that I'm in favor or supporting what Mr. Trump's saying about banning all Muslims from coming to this country, because the next thing he's going to say, I'm going to be banning all Baptists coming to this country. I'm going to be banning all the Jews coming from this country. In other words, if this to move forward, he or anyone who's going to follow this path is going to set a precedent that's going to just makes us think twice about, really, is this what our Constitution is all about? Is this what the whole country stands for? And this is
well,
where...
Well, you know... The last sentence in this U.S. Code, this is what's, to me, the most interesting. It's actually not even the last sentence. It's the last half of the sentence. Of course, it says, yes, that he can, or the president can, if they deem necessary, suspend entry of all aliens or any class of aliens as immigrants or non-immigrants, or, and this is the part I'm talking about, impose on the entry of aliens any restrictions he may deem to be appropriate. So it's not saying you have to ban an entire group of people. It's saying that you have the option, if you can think about it, and this is what part of my show the other night, you know, Donald Trump, I believe, is smart enough to have come up with, you know, some of these restrictions. What are some restrictions that we can apply to these people that are desperately, some of them, honestly, look, I know there's plenty of Muslims who are dying to wipe out ISIS. They hate them just as much as we hate them. And to say that, to lump them all together in the same pot, it's just wrong. But at the same time, we have to find a way to limit our exposure to the potential terrorism. What are some real tangible tactics that we can, options for doing that? I mean, they're already here. How many did they say were in Ellis County? 400?
I heard that. Well, one of the things that out of this conversation and discussion we have nationally, did you hear the term or the word Saudi Arabia came out of any presidential candidate? I don't think so. It didn't come up in the conversation. And this is probably where the source of the problem is. It's for a simple reason. Americans are sick. They are sick of hearing about this. We got to be careful about our valuable Arab allies. We have to be careful not to upset this, not to upset that. And I'm referring her to Saudi Arabia, because you will not hear much about it. Why? It's because the type of relationship Washington has with Riyadh. And yet, when you think about it, and when you talk to some scholars, and I've conversed with some regarding this matter, that Saudi Arabia being the father and still the driving religious and monetary patron of the Islamic movement. I mean, why aren't we hearing much about it? Why aren't we hearing about the entities within the Arab tyrannies, which it doesn't go? They still appear to be funding ISIS or ATU or any other Islamic groups. Why aren't we hearing much about it? They're still going ahead with funding and madrasas and school and stuff that teaches intolerance. Why aren't we hearing much about all this? Why? Because we want to be politically correct. When I say we, I'm referring to the politicians in Washington, D.C., who wanted to keep that away from the American people to understand. And
now, we're just another debtor to Saudi Arabia. I mean, they are... So, you know,
exactly.
It's like
you don't
call up the bank and say, call them bad names and tell them how stupid they are. No, they're going to call your loan due, and then what are you going to do if you don't have the money? If Saudi Arabia says, you know what, United States, we're done with you.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because if you think about it, how many people know that there's about $5 to $6 trillion of Saudi money here in the U.S.? Can you imagine pulling that money out? How much is going to impact our economy? I mean, let's face it. Let's call things for what they are and stop sugarcoating stuff, because that's part of our problem. At the same time, when you're going to stop sugarcoating the matters or whatever you want to call them, you're going to have a civilized conversation. You're going to have to talk logically and rationally about how you propose policies, how you propose ideas, and how you're going to solve our issues. Bravado and lies and falsehood is not going to cut it. Because at some point, once you get to the power, you're going to be, people's going to realize that you are made out of nothing. So all your ideas and talk were nothing but an empty rhetoric. That's where the problem is.
Yeah, we don't have, they say we don't have the political will is why things really don't happen, but to me that's just an excuse. I think it's like you're saying, we want to keep sugarcoating things. We're trying to ride this train till it's off the tracks instead of warning everyone and telling people to stop getting on the train. I wanted to ask you, though, let's pretend you were in charge of creating a system, a series of questions that you might ask Syrian refugees. How would you question them to determine what their intentions were?
The first thing I would ask is to understand, why do you want to move to the U.S.? Why the U.S. particularly? Why not another country, whether in the West or the Muslim world? Okay?
They say we want freedom. We want freedom.
Well, does that mean you can't get freedom, for example, in Australia? You can't get freedom in Denmark? You can't get freedom in Sweden? So I would ask that question. And at the same time, I would ask, okay, why not consider another Muslim country? Does that mean that all Muslim countries are bad? Not necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in Morocco. Morocco is a good country. It's liberal. It's open. It's open-minded. Yet it has its own problems. They're dealing with it. They're containing the problem over there. But it's a country that you can live there freely, per se. You can be sort of in work. You contribute, whatever. So I would ask that question first. And second, I got to understand, not to judge here, but I got to understand from which ethnic group you're coming from. Okay, what type of Shia are you? What type of Sunni are you? Okay, and those are not judgmental questions in asking, okay, if you are a Sunni, well, what type of jurisprudence you follow? What type of school of thought within the Sunni apparatus are you following? Okay, and the third thing will be... Yeah, go ahead.
And so the options that they have, obviously they know what we want to hear. They're obviously lying.
Then this is where you're going to have a well-trained U.S. officers who not only speak a few words here and there of Arabic language, but ones who are well-versed into the culture and understand the ins and outs of the wording. I mean, without going into details, in my previous work over in the Middle East, it was so easy to identify when we're dealing with a foreign entity. It was easy to identify if somebody is playing with words. In other words, wants us to hear what we want to hear. And I had the opportunity of sometime challenging those individuals, say, wait a minute. You're saying this, and from my understanding, this particular wording goes this direction. What we're asking about is in the other direction. So which is which? You kind of put them on the spot. Mm-hmm. And this happened because I have a little understanding of the culture. I have an in-depth understanding of the language, and I can understand where the wordings are. So the officers who's going to be conducting this kind of interviews, they better be well-trained, well-informed, linguistically capable, and also have some sort of an analytical abilities to understand how the culture operates, how the mindset of the Arab world functions. Without those criteria, I don't think so they can understand in this from that. Because as you suggested, somebody can word whatever they want to hear and they'll get through.
On a scale, well, first of all, do you think that these sort of interviews are taking place?
Not to my knowledge. The ones I was involved in at some point in my career were on a different level, different capacity, different directions altogether. It has nothing to do with refugees and all that. So those kind of interviews, and I partake on them, and I took care of those interviews in great depth and detail because I wanted to make sure. So mm-hmm. I don't know whether the interviews they're conducting today are... the bottom line is this, dude. I think the government, it just does not have efficiency in its process when it comes down to this.
And do you think that that's by design? I mean, I know I do. I kind of feel like President Obama... before he even was elected, that was his goal, to kind of diminish our military strength, to make us more equal around the world instead of a superpower, you know, to take assets away, to eliminate our ability to really stop what's happening. And I mean, that's how my mind works. Maybe I just jump to conclusions, but
No, you're not. Especially your wording about the word equal. That's, at least in my understanding, within the geopolitical context, that's a very dangerous word. In a sense that we don't want to be equal. When it comes down to geopolitics, you don't want to be equal. You want to be at the top.
Mm-hmm.
That's what matters the most. I mean, you look at the chaos that's going on right now in the Middle East and how we are perceived by other nations. Look how the Russians are approaching us. Look how the Chinese are approaching us. There is a piece coming up this weekend. I wrote something about the dynamics, and I argued that we have to think very carefully, but at the same time, you have to maintain the upper hand. Now, when it comes down to the word equal, it shouldn't apply. Because we strive to be the best. We strive. Remember our interview like 3 or 4 weeks ago? We don't go just by, medium performance or whatever. We go for the utmost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we are not satisfied with just average. Because we are not average.
And that's the whole concept of what we call American exceptionalism, that people, Obama thinks that people around the world don't like us because of that. And so therefore, rather than they raise the bar to our level, he prefers that we lower our bar to their level. That's the whole problem with, in my opinion, with liberalism, socialism, and unfortunately, they've all embedded themselves in the Democrat Party, and I kind of feel like their party's been hijacked. You know, So Donald Trump is extreme, maybe, and jump, you know, his total ban on Muslim. surely there's a middle ground somewhere. Maybe, you know, we know he's a negotiator, so he sets the bars at a place that's so impossible that when he gives up, it's still better a position. You know, I just think of him as a negotiator. And that's how he gets things done. He doesn't care what people think. His supporters don't care what he says about things like that. It emboldens them. I asked a question on Facebook to someone about Trump's comment, and someone responded real quickly, called me a moron, called me a rhino, called me an idiot, called me stupid.
That's uncivilized. That's uncivilized, and that's our problem.
They don't even know me.
Yeah, you forgive their ignorance. That's the only thing you can do. You forgive their ignorance.
Yeah.
And this is our issue here, because this in these days we have less civilized conversations. We couldn't even disagree because we lost that moral compass on understanding ideals, on respecting different opinions. And I think with what's going on with the Trump, it's always makes me think about, okay, what's going on with the Republican Party? Because that's what I hear the most about. I mean, I'm sure the Democratic Party, and I'm not in favor of any whatsoever. I'm in favor of what's good for the United States. And I want to make sure that issues are well explained to the American people so they can understand how to vote. We bear responsibility on this, Duke, as well. We better educate ourselves about the issues. We better have a better understanding. Otherwise, I'm sure you recall what Alexei the Tocqueville, the French politician, once said about our country. You know what I said? And I quote here, those that despise people will never, never get the best out of others and of themselves. That's the sad part. We need to respect differences of opinions. Yes, Donald Trump is saying some crazy, crazy stuff, but listen and respect the opinion. You might disagree, but in a civilized manner, or like this individual who responded to your Facebook posting, which is, that's complete ignorance. So what do you do with somebody like that? You just forgive his ignorance, because he's not going to understand, or she's not going to understand. And that's what we're missing. That's what we are missing in this country.
Well, I want to switch gears. I know, normally our show is 30 minutes. I booked a little extra time tonight just in case we went long. I wanted to get your opinion on, I think it was in Paris, there was a mosque that was raided. And they found 300 plus weapons and arrested over 200 Muslims.
Okay.
What's going on? I mean, those of us who are not in that circle, who are not going to mosques, the conclusions that we're drawing are that that's happening. You know, our conclusion is to err on the side of caution and speculation than to say, oh, surely that's not happening here. What do you think? How do we deal with that?
How we deal with it is by having those Muslims who go to the mosque, the ones who care about where our country is, speak up. And when I say speak up, I'm not talking about just, hey, or this or that. I'm talking about you address the issue with those individuals in the mosque and say, listen, if I ever see this or that, I am turning you in. I don't care. Because you are not going to use the religion for your own agenda. You are not going to use the mosque to push your own agenda. You come here to worship in this land of the free. It's because Muslims are happy to be here in America to worship freely. Let me tell you this, Duke. Even in Muslim countries, they will not have the freedom that we have here in this country. So it is the responsibility of the...
Tell me what you're talking about. Give me some examples.
The example, for example, you go to the mosque. You go on Friday prayer, okay? You got a preacher who's going to give a sermon, okay? You sit down and listen to the sermon. Then all of a sudden, you have these fiery statements about Christians or about Jews or about this or about that, and everybody just sitting around and watching and listening. Rather than once that imam or that preacher, whatever you want to call him, finishes his sermon, you're going to walk up to him and listen and tell him, you listen. You give the sermon. We respect you for that. But this fiery stuff nonsense has to stop.
And you can't do that. You can't do that in a Muslim country. They'll kill you.
Yes, but we can do it here in our country because this is where freedom comes in. This is where democracy is. That's in my opinion. That's how well we do it.
Don't you think this is going to be solved by Muslims? This problem has got to be solved from within somehow.
But it will be solved within Muslim within their own capabilities. Because remember, who's funding all this turmoil? Who's supporting all this? It's way at the top. In countries where the version of Islam, the interpretation of Islam is wrong to begin with. Take, for example, the Wahhabism ideology, which doesn't exist. It does not exist in Islam. I don't know where they came up with these interpretations of women has to cover head to toe. It does not exist, and it shouldn't exist. And we shouldn't have it here in this country. I respected the hijab. I was born in a Muslim country and so forth. But there is no thing that says in the Quran that a woman has to cover head to toe. It does not exist. So the interpretation coming out of the Wahhabism is fueling this kind of interpretations, supporting this kind of arguments, and that's what these fundamentalists and extremists are fearing of. So the change itself has to happen in the source where this interpretation is coming from. But how are you going to do that when you have majority of the country controlled in the hands of few? That's where the problem is. How can you do that when our politicians are not addressing the issue head on? Let's put it in the table. It's because they owned us. It's because we're depending on their oils. It's because we're depending on their money. Isn't that what it says in the Bible, that if you hold a debt on somebody, you become their slave or something like that?
We're the slave, all right. Exactly.
That's where the issue is. So the issue is far bigger. We can do our part as an individuals, and we need to push harder on this. As I said, when you have a preacher who's giving a fiery sermon, you're going to tell him, this is your last one here. You're done here. And this is why I don't believe in giving authority to somebody just because he's wearing a foot-long beard and all of a sudden he's well knowledgeable, he's this and he's that. There is no such thing. I respect you, but that does not mean you can just dictate whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's because we're not saying it the way it is. That's what's going to have to happen.
Wahhabism is... It may find its way on our exempted list before too long.
I must tell you, it won't be an easy thing to do because it's way up at the top. It's not an easy thing to do. But till you educate the citizenry about the difference between that interpretation and what Islam says, and you will, once we understand that, what's in this Wahhabism ideology does not exist in Islam per se, then they'll start to differentiate between, okay, maybe this is where the source of the issues are. And take just this example, and I am, by the way, in support of, when you come to live in America, okay, a woman should not be covered head to toe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If I were a lawmaker, I'll make sure of that. This is not about challenging anybody's constitutional rights. She still can go to the mosque, but your face is not going to be covered head to toe because there is no such thing to begin with.
So outlaw the burqa.
I will outlaw that one. I'll be the first one to support that. Because I know it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So why pretend that stuff exists in Islam when they don't?
See, but, I mean, don't you see yourself treading on thin ice among Muslims? It seems to me like they would consider you their worst enemy. I'm just an infidel. They don't care about me. But you, on the other hand, you know what you're talking about.
Well, I would challenge them. I would challenge them on it. Prove it to me. In the Quran or in the Sunnah, where it says that a woman has to cover her head to toe.
You know, I'm looking forward to the day when conversations like this are more common, when more people understand that not every, you know, when I first heard the Donald Trump statement, in fact, it's only a few seconds long. I'm going to play it real quick. We've got 8 more minutes, so we'll talk about it. Here's the statement that we've been talking about.
Sure. Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on. We have no choice. We have no choice.
And you see, that's the way he ends it, where he says we have no choice. That's what gets me. He knows better. He knows that we've got more choices, but that's not the choice he wants to go with. He
exactly.
He likes it that he's pushing that envelope. And
And here's what the problem with all this, Duke. It's what bothers me the most. Not about the statement itself, of course, that's part of it, but also how he hijacking the ideals of the Republican Party. The Republican Party that I learned about, the conservative values and so forth. At the same time, the Republican Party doesn't stand for this. That's not what the Republican Party that I know.
Well, and that's why you saw Paul Ryan.
Yeah, and I heard
come out and speak against that.
Yeah, and Dr. Carson stepped forward with that. Ted Cruz stepped forward with that. Paul Ryan stepped forward with that. Because you cannot use the platform of the Republican Party to push your own agenda at the expense of where the party stands for. And that's problematic to me. That also tells me there is a lot of chaos within the party itself, and we need to take a step back and reconsider the party's survival in this diverse world. That we're going to have to do that. They're going to have to do that. It's because for a simple reason, we can't be turning on our neighbors. You know, I have a neighbor that I've been seeing for the last 10 years. Just because he happens to be of different ethnicity, just because he happens to be born overseas, whatever, in a Muslim country, I'm going to turn over on the guy. It's not right. It's not American. It's not ideal. It's not something we do. That's what differentiates us from the rest of the world. We can't be compared to others, because if we go that path, if we go that route, then that we are no different than some other country in the Middle East that control its people, or some other dictatorship. It's almost like the ideals of America cease to exist.
Well,
and we can't allow that to happen.
It's fear. Fear is a great motivator, and
it is indeed.
People are fearful of many things. They look at black people differently now. You look at a group of young black guys walking closely together towards you. There's plenty of videos of fights and crazy things happening. So you know what? That image is ingrained. It's same things happening with Muslims. Same thing's happening with Hispanics. There's so many illegal immigrant Hispanics that now, even when I go to the grocery store, if I'm wearing some just yard clothes or something like that, I kind of wonder whether people think I'm an illegal immigrant or something. It's just crazy. Nobody knows up or down anymore, and no one trusts anybody.
Because we are not having a dialogue, a civilized dialogue. We're not conversing. We're not talking with each other. We're talking at each other.
The program, or this program tonight, folks, has been great. You're going to want to go back and listen to it over and over. You can even download the episode and cut audio pieces out. I encourage it. I don't have a problem with it. I encourage you taking this audio and sharing it with others and spreading it, because that's really what our purpose is, to get this kind of message out. You know, we've just got a minute or so, a couple minutes left in the show. Dr. Walalu, give us your final thoughts.
My final thought is I remain optimistic. America will remain the land of the free and a home of the brave only as long as we rally to its greater ideals that we always stood for.
That is well said. I always appreciate you coming on. I appreciate all that you're doing for the younger generation. You know, as a professor, you're in there talking to these guys. Let them know that we have high hopes for them. Tell your students that we appreciate their efforts, and they need to come up with some solutions, because truly they are the future.
That is correct.
Thank you again. We're out of here, folks. Find us on Facebook, The Duke Machado Show, or on Twitter, @DukeMachado1. Catch you later.